it's not part of their life. It's just something we lecture about. You know what I mean? It's a behavioral boundary, but it's not something that's modeled as being important in the lives of the parents themselves. There's another thing that I've noticed that parents and ministers can do with children, and it's what the disciples were doing right here, perhaps not intentionally, but it's to make children feel that they're not important, they're unworthy. They're just in the way. And that makes it difficult for him to come to Jesus. You know, it's an interesting thing, and we've remarked about this before, when Jesus, standing in a group of critical people, motioned to a little child to come to him, and the child came, walked right up in front of everybody and jumped up into Jesus' arms. It tells you that there was something about him that was not off-putting to children. And, I love that about him. So the disciples may have thought that children weren't important to Jesus, and that's where they're trying to stop him. You know, there's lots more important stuff to do. And Jesus said, oh, no, no, no. Not only are they important, but I love what he says. Let me read what he says here. Allow the little children to come to me, and don't hinder them. Don't prevent them. Don't make it harder for them to come to me, because the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. The Amplified Bible just reverses the syntax a little bit, but makes it more pointed. It says, of such as these is the kingdom composed, or the kingdom is composed of people who are like this. Remember, the guys trying to stop the kids from coming are the guys who were arguing about which one of them was the most important. And Jesus says, no, none of you. Not when you're thinking like that. You need to change and become like a little child before you will ever enter. I remember a conversation I had with somebody about, it was at a men's retreat, actually. And I was talking about this. And one guy said, well, you know, my dad never went to church. My dad never actually said anything kind to me, never hugged me, never told me that he loved me. And that's the reason why, you know, I don't do that. And he said, and I turned out okay. And I looked at him and said, no, you didn't. If you think that's normal, you didn't turn out okay. You know, if you think that's acceptable behavior, you're just going to pass on that nasty stuff that your dad did. You're going to pass it on to your kids, and they'll pass it on to their kids. I love it when Jesus is the model. Not just what he says, but what he does. What he says is pretty poignant. He says, I tell you the truth, anyone who will not receive, that's the operative word, especially contrasted with down with the rich young ruler, when he wanted to know what he had to do. Jesus talks about receiving the kingdom. Anyone who doesn't receive the kingdom of God the way a child does will never enter it. What do you suppose that means? Does that need a tremendous amount of interpretation? I think it's really clear. We did examine it when he said it before. What does it mean, like a child? And I wrote down four or five things. Humility is one characteristic of a child. I'll tell you, all of these things that are good about children are also the reasons why they get hurt. And it's also the reason why adults stop being that way. It's to protect themselves. So humility is one characteristic of the way little children receive the kingdom. The other one that is so sobering to me is trusting. Kids will believe whatever you tell them about God. This is why it really bugs me when I see parents venting their opinionatedness on their children. That religion stuff is all bogus. Oh. And they're unloading that on their kids, and their kids don't have a filter all the time to know whether what's being said is the truth or not. They just accept it. That's why I love seeing little kids when you tell them that God listens to their prayers. They believe you. Isn't it ironic that some of their parents don't believe it, and yet they tell their kids that? Because their parents worry about stuff like it's all on their shoulders. They never unload anything to God. They don't trust God, and yet now we're telling our kids that, you know, it's that Santa Claus thing, you know? You lie to them for years, and then you spring it on them that it's not really true. Kids will just automatically believe what you say about God, and that's the way to receive the kingdom. They are resilient. Kids are way more resilient than adults when it comes to failure, because failure is part of learning, as we all know, but kids don't have a problem with that a lot of times unless we lay a standard on them they're unable to bear and make them feel horrible about failure. Failure is part of the education process, isn't it? I could tell you all this Thomas Edison stories and all of that, but it is part of education, is failing. Little kids don't seem to be intimidated by that. And that's the way to receive the kingdom. Eager to please. It's another way to receive the kingdom. And real, straightforward. Guileless is the word I used last time when Jesus said this. What you see is what you get. Now, are any or all of those qualities even remotely like what church people are famous for? Pretty much not. And you can see why, it's certainly not what the disciples were like or the religious leaders of Israel, and that's why Jesus said these words. Now notice once again, he said these words because he wants you in the kingdom, not because he's trying to keep you out. He's just saying, you think you're going to get in the kingdom, or you think you're already in the kingdom because you're important. He says, no, that's not the way in. I want you in there, but you need to alter your attitude. There needs to be some humility. You need to be real. And then I love what he did in verse, by the way, I said the word receive here in verse 15. Is the word simply is what you do with a gift. There's no earning involved. There's not jump through these hoops and you get in. He talks about unless you receive the kingdom in the manner of a child, you won't enter. It can't be earned. Here we are 2,000 years later, and most religious people still don't believe that, do they? Can't be earned. It's a gift. Wouldn't you think that would be good news? Well, it depends. It depends on how good about yourself you want to feel. The number one reason why legalism and performance-based religion is so strong is that it makes people feel not only better about themselves, but it makes them feel superior to others. That's why it's so popular. If I have to stand on the same level playing field as Jeffrey Dahmer and Adolf Hitler and Mother Teresa, and I mean just the whole gamut of humanity, and say I will not get in without my way being paid by somebody else, and I humbled myself, unless I'm willing to do that, I can't wave my resume in God's face and expect it's going to be honored. And that's hard for some people. Not so much for children. And I love that. So I love what he did about it. He took him in his arms. I want to talk about this for a minute. Have you ever known anybody that was never touched in tenderness by a parent? I know lots of people like that. It's shocking how many people I know like that. I know people who were never picked up by their mothers. Can you even imagine that? I know lots of them. They don't know what affection is. I know children, not just girls, but boys, that the only touch they ever had from their father was in anger. Now, it can get you in trouble in this culture that we live in, but I try to touch children a lot. And this is the model that I use. And if I just mess up their hair or pat them on the top of the head, I try to do that a lot. This is the model. This is the reason I do it. It means something. I've had enough classes and enough lessons in counseling with people who've been abused to understand the value of the touch of affection, the touch of affirmation, especially when it comes from a man who's a father or an authority figure. And some kids grow up without that, and it messes them up really bad. And you think, what's the big deal? You know, my dad never did it for me, and I turned out okay. Yeah, no, you didn't. Not if you're thinking that way. Because it does matter. And it could be changed. One of the things that we've said about this fellowship from the very beginning is that for some people, this was going to be their family. Because some people don't have a family. Their biological family doesn't act anything like what a family's supposed to be. And so for many, especially children and even adults in this fellowship, the only family affirmation they're ever going to get is going to come from us. So every man has an opportunity to show the way that children deserve to be treated by men. Every woman has the opportunity to show children what it means to be treated by an older woman. I mean, oh, we have that wonderful opportunity, and it does more good than you can imagine. I love that Jesus took this child up in his arms. I asked a question at this man's retreat that I spoke for last time I taught, it was a few years before that. Four different churches were there, so there was maybe 200 men. I asked the question, how many of you were ever picked up as a child by your father? Two or three men out of 200 raised their hand. My dad would never do that, was what most of them said. And it always makes me wonder, what would happen if he had? What does a child feel when they're cradled in that window? Does this sound fruity to you? If it sounds fruity to you, you might be more damaged than you think. Because this is the way men are supposed to be. Jesus, our example. That's why I don't think it's a little deal, that it's a big deal that he picked the child up. One of the things that does, Gail Irwin points out, is that puts the child at eye level with you. Now, I'm not grading you or anything. I think most of the men that are here, all of the men that are here that are fathers, are certainly, I think, a good example of this, not a bad example. But I have watched children who are never looked in the eyes by their fathers, and sometimes even by their mothers, except in anger. That's the only message that's sent. You wonder why people grow up having difficulty understanding God as their father without thinking of him as being angry all the time? I think that's a clue. I love that Jesus just picked them up. Eye level. I read a study, and I've forgotten all the statistics, and I couldn't find them in any of my notes, but it was pretty compelling. The number of bonding events that happen between a mother and her child in the first 6 months of life, it was astonishing. And most of it was communicated by the eyes. There was touch involved. There was just the demeanor and the countenance was involved. But how much of it was communicated by the eyes? I think for small children, being picked up is a big deal. Gail Irwin says, if that's not appropriate, or if you can't do that, then get down where they are. Get low. Sit down on the ground if you have to, so they're not looking at your knees. And I've been trying to do that kind of stuff. Like I said, it's such a sick world, you can get in trouble if you touch kids that aren't your own. I just love that Jesus was saw the value in this. I'm sure it was communicated. He placed his hands on them. I already said that I've met lots of people that never experienced any touch from a man, except the wrong kind. So he places his hand on them in gentleness. That means there's contact. It's not from a distance. It's blessing. It's now, does there ever need to be placing your hands on them in discipline? I think the Bible makes it really clear that that's part of it. But why is it so easy to discipline a child and that kind of touch, and so hard, especially not just for men? I know for women too, but women seem to be more hardwired properly. But why is it so hard for there to be affectionate touch? Few names and faces cross my mind. Some guys that are, you take one look at them and you would think this is a manly man. They have muscles, they have lots of testosterone in the sound of their voice, and their whole posture is anything, but they can't touch anybody. It's just not manly. I beg to differ. I think that's wrong. And I think that comes from somewhere. Because instinctively we need it. And when people are not that way, it's usually because there's damage that's been done a long time ago that's never been dealt with. Once again, we're Christians. We have Jesus living in us. I think it's fair to look at him as an example. This is our creator. This is our designer. This is the one that Scripture says is the template of manliness, of humanness. It's important to watch how he treats people. Takes them up in his arms. Places his hands on them, and good old Amplified Bible says he fervently blessed them. What does that mean? The word bless is a vocal word. It means he spoke blessing on them. Last time I taught this in Mark, which was about, 7 or 8 years ago, there was a man who was weeping. And he'd been one of those guys that the only words that any of his kids ever heard from him was correction or lecture. He would never look them in the eyes, or anger. And God broke him. Now, I certainly didn't do it. God broke him, and he made a purpose in his heart he visited his adult children who lived in other states. And did this very thing. He said, I know that you're going to think I'm weird, but he said, God's been speaking to me that I should have done this 40 years ago. And he said, would you mind if I bless you? And they're looking at him like, you're creeping me out here, Dad. You're creeping me out. But he had tears in his eyes. So they said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to say some things to you. Interesting thing, when we talked about this that time, in the Old Testament, God honored whenever a father blessed his children, even if they didn't ask him, even if God didn't tell them, this is what I want you to do. Every time they did, God honored that blessing as if it came from God himself. It's kind of an interesting study if you want to look through that. So what this man did, he just put his hands on his adult children, and he spoke words of affirmation. Some of them just immediately started weeping. They'd never heard their dad speak to them that way in their whole life. He talked about what a treasure they were. He prayed God's blessing on them. He asked God to give him the words before he made the trip. I have a great deal of respect, because it's hard to alter life patterns, especially for men, with regards, because there's a great deal of humility that had to happen just to be able to do that. I'll tell you this, it changed his family, and it changed him. When's it too late to start? I don't think it's ever too late to start. You may have done a lot of damage already, but it's amazing what words of blessing can do to people. And sometimes if they come from the very lips that haven't done it before, it's even more powerful. Works for men and women. So I just love this scene. Maybe I'm getting a lot out of this, but I tell you, if you could see the wreckage that I see, the effects of not being like this, especially with children, you know, you could not care and think I'm just being a, you know, creepy. But you know what? It has an effect on people. It goes well into their adult years. Either the positive effects of this or the negative effects of this. Boy, it's hard to do. I think it's really hard to do, especially if you've been different. It's just hard to. I have one guy that at that men's retreat that I talked to said, I'm going to have to reinvent myself. And I said, no, that's God's job. That's not your job. Your job is to see whether this is the truth. And if he's tugging at your heart, you have Jesus living in you. You know, maybe you weren't letting him run anything for all those years, but you do now. Ask him. He'll help you. He knows how to do this. Oh, I've just got this really bad habit. Well, that's what he came for, is to change those bad habits. He lives in us. He's able to do it. Ask him. I have so much respect for the man that did this with his adult children, because he was in fear and trembling. He drove hours and hours and hours. He had to swallow a lot of pride. And it may be the most valuable thing he ever did, more than all the money that he was able to give them, more than all the, quotes, life lessons that he supposedly taught them. So I don't think I'm making too much out of this. Vignette number two, let's look at the rich young ruler for the rest of our time. You have to put three different accounts together to be able to get the fact that he was rich, he was young. He was religious also. So all these four qualities about this guy that comes to Jesus, it's interesting to me. I said this last time. Every time I read it, the thing that I notice is he's young, he's rich. You hardly ever see that together. He's young, he's rich, he's a ruler. He has power. Nobody has to tell him what to do. He tells other people what to do. And he's a good guy. Here's the thing to notice. Something wasn't right. He had all of the things that we think will make us content, but he wasn't. Isn't that curious? I think it's interesting that he's a humble guy, because he came to Jesus and admitted this. He said, you know, I've tried to do the best that I could, and it's not happening. It's not working. I must be doing it wrong. I must be missing something. It's interesting that he knew to come to Jesus.